president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he has sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. When you're trying to figure out whether a country is a dictatorship or a democracy, it can be more difficult than you might think. Centuries ago, it was probably fairly easy. Most of the world was ruled by kings and princes and tribal chiefs. And then you could tell if there was a vote, that meant someone was a Democrat. If there was not a vote, then that was a dictatorship. But in the last couple of centuries, it hasn't always been that clear. Dictators often use votes to proclaim their legitimacy, but still undermine democratic institutions. Perhaps the most famous example is Adolf Hitler. Let us never forget that Hitler arrived in Germany legally. He was elected by a plurality of Germans. He achieved the chancellorship perfectly legally, and then he proceeded, once he came into power, to dismantle the German democratic institutions of the Weimar Republic, putting his political opponents in jail and making sure to consolidate all power under his rule. In Latin America, there's been a tradition of military dictatorships, the caudillo, as it were, coup d'etat, one after the other. But Venezuela was, at least since the late 1950s, a counterexample. Democracy in Venezuela was fairly well established from 1958 well into the 1990s. What are we to think now? The leader of Venezuela's name is Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez himself tried to do a coup d'etat in 1992. He failed. But then there's no question he was democratically elected in 1998 and re-elected 6 years later. He's no fan of the United States, but that doesn't mean he's not a Democrat. After all, we support some pretty awful dictators throughout the world. How are we to judge Venezuela? How are we to judge whether or not this is a country whose leaders should be respected? Is this a country where human rights are respected? To answer some of these difficult questions, I've invited someone who's been a real leader in this fight. He is a Venezuelan human rights lawyer. His name is Gonzalo Imiob Santomé. And I will simply call him Gonzalo because my Spanish is not very good. Gonzalo, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you very much.
Let's start, before we get to the specifics of what you've done, with the history of Venezuela, at least the more recent history. Obviously, it was a Spanish colony. It became independent in the early 1800s. But in 1958, Venezuelan democracy was fairly well established. Is that fair to say?
Yes. There was a fail of the dictatorship of Marcos Perez Jimenez. And from that moment on, the democracy was constructed in Venezuela very fairly. Okay,
there was a two-party system.
Yes, a two-party system.
Judicial independence.
Sometimes forgotten about the poor people in Venezuela. That is true. And of course, there were some flaws in the 40-year period of democracy, but it was a democracy. At least formally, it was a democracy, and some institutions were respected. The independence between the powers was respected.
Now, there is criticism about the democratic years from 1958 to 1998, that 40-year period. As you said, the poor people of Venezuela were not perhaps as respected as they should have been. There was a democracy, there were elected parties, but somehow poverty kept increasing.
Yes, poverty kept increasing, and there was a pattern of exclusion, yes, that must not be forgotten when we realize what we are living right now in Venezuela, because those critics, those criticisms to the former democracy in Venezuela were the ones that allowed Hugo Chavez to get into the power, okay, by elections. Second time he tried it.
So going through his history, in 1992 he tried what might be called a traditional Latin American way to take power through a coup d'etat.
Yeah, very violent one.
A violent one. And that failed and he was imprisoned.
Yes, he was imprisoned until he was granted pardon by President Rafael Caldera.
And yet 6 years later, he remakes himself, gets out of prison, and wins a fair election in Venezuela.
Yeah,
what did he promise in 1998? Why did he win that election?
Well, other than to fry the heads of their opposition leaders at that moment, okay, because that was part of his speech at this moment, he offered to reconstruct the complete democratic system in Venezuela in order to make the people have more power, more control of their institutions. And that sounded pretty good at the time. That was something that everybody wants to hear at that moment in Venezuela. Of course, there were people, and I was one of them, that didn't comply with the way of putting things of Chavez at that moment. He was continuously using the violent speech when specifically talking about his opposition. Okay, he was saying that, okay, I am a very peaceful man, but you have to remember that I am a military, that I have weapons, but I am peaceful.
It's kind of a strange mixture. I'm peaceful, but if you oppose me, I have weapons.
Yes.
It's kind of a mixed message.
Yes, and that is a message that that he keeps repeating to the people. Okay, I'm peaceful, but I have weapons. And somehow that speech was very popular in the between the people, the population, because of course there was an excluding system, okay, that makes poverty really, really a reality in my country, and that is a truth, okay. So he sees that and he uses that to gain power and to maintain himself into the power.
Okay, but the idea of helping the poor and being a person of relatively low means, someone who came from a fairly impoverished family, help the poor. People talk about land reform in Latin America, give the poor a chance. That's why they supported him. Did he fulfill those promises?
No, not at this moment. Venezuela is now more poorer than it was in 1998.
Even with all its oil wealth, one thing we haven't mentioned is Venezuela has a tremendous advantage over many Latin American countries. It has a lot of oil.
Yes, and in the last 10 years, the oil revenues have been the bigger oil revenues, even larger and greater than the previous oil revenues. Okay, so and now Chavez has a problem because the oil prices are going down and everything, but Chavez has not only the popularity, but also the economic opportunity to make Venezuela a better place. He didn't fulfill that promise.
What has Chavez done with democratic institutions, specifically the judiciary, which used to be very independent in Venezuela? It's no longer independent?
Well, it is not completely correct to say that the judiciary was completely independent in Venezuela. We have to be very objective about this. There was corruption. Before Chavez came into power, there was somehow in a certain levels there was a politicization of the structure. There were some decisions, mostly in some courts or in the Supreme Court, made by interest of politics. Okay, but since Chavez came into power, okay, he seized the complete institutions. He was very clear that he doesn't want to be perceived as a president that is controlled by his institutions. He wants to own the institution. So the first thing he does is to convoke a constitutional complete reform, okay?
Because the original constitution had separate branches of government, much like we have in the United
States.
Judiciary, legislative, and executive.
And our new constitution also has this separation of powers, but it is a very presidentialist constitution, okay? And it has its ways, to assure Chavez into the power. But that is not the problem, the Constitution. The problem is what came with this whole process of the Constitution. The first thing he does is to promote the idea that the former Constitution, the 1961 Constitution, is no longer valid. So there is this Constitutional Assembly, which is in charge of everything at that moment. I am talking about 1998, 1999. And he says, okay, what this assembly does is beyond this previous constitution, okay? They can do everything with no limits because this constitution is no longer valid.
So basically he declares all the old law, all the old constitution, it's no longer valid.
It's no longer valid.
They can do whatever they want.
Yes, they say that in the Spanish the word is supraconstitucional, that these decisions this assembly is making were over the Constitution. So
and the assembly, to be clear, that's your legislature.
Yeah.
That's what we would call the Congress.
No, it's a new place.
Oh, it's a new place.
No, it's a new thing. He called it the Constitutional Assembly, which is supposed to derive from the power of the people, you know. He summoned the power of the people to constitute this constitutional assembly, which is above all powers and is not restricted by the prior laws or constitution.
Okay, that well, but if the assembly is elected by the people, there wouldn't be a problem with it.
Yes, there wouldn't be a problem, but the problem is that the elections began to be controlled by this assembly and the people they appointed, for example, to the Supreme Court.
So they control their own elections?
Yes, of course. Yes, that was a problem. Of course, that assembly wasn't completely controlled by the officialists, but there was a very few representation, a few representation of the opposition that wasn't really paid attention to, okay? The complaints they made, the propositions they made wasn't really taken into consideration when they make the new constitution, okay? But the problem is not the new constitution. I was saying, for example, this assembly took over the legislative process, okay? So there was no longer a Congress, okay? The Congress was was dissolved.
No one cares anymore.
Yeah, no, was dissolved, and this
was dissolved completely.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't even exist.
Yes, even this assembly was called the Congresillo, the little Congress, because they not only were in charge of making the new constitution, but also were in charge of passing the laws.
But who chooses the people in that constitutional assembly?
That was an election, but an election that was characterized by the complete control of all the media of the government, okay, and a very abusive use of the power of Chavez.
So the opposition couldn't have their view
not
heard.
In fair basis, okay? They, yes, we have a representation there, but not in fair basis, okay? But as I was telling you, the problem was not the constitution, the issue. In fact, I think that the constitution of Venezuela of 1999, which was the result of that assembly, in human rights issues, for example, is one of the most advanced constitutions in the world. I have no complaint about that. It's a very presidentialist constitution, but it has, you know, this good thing.
It has protections that, for human rights.
Yes, it has protections. In fact, that is why Chavez always wants to reform this constitution, because it's like a shirt that somehow is, you know,
too tight.
Yeah, too tight to him at this moment. That is why he has tried several times, one of them sadly with success, to reform the constitution, because the constitution put very severe severe restraints to the action of the president, even with even considering that it's a very presidentialist constitution. But this assembly, for example, took over the judiciary for completely. And what they did, they created this commission of the judiciary that the first thing they did was to say, okay, I want to review the work of all the judges. And that was great, because we were not happy with the judges we had.
You want to have fair judges.
Yes, and in the beginning, there was very respectful people, law professors from the universities, you know, trying to review, to evaluate everything with the judiciary.
Tell you what, hold it right there, because we have to take a break. So it's starting out okay with a decent constitution, a decent commission. I want to explore where it went wrong.
A little bit abusive, but
okay. I want to explore where we went off the beaten path, if you will, in Venezuela, and also invite our callers to join in. If you have a question or comment, if you agree or disagree with our lawyer here, all you have to do is give us a call, 888-488-MARK, back after this.
Saving for retirement might be easy for some folk, but for others, it might take a little more work. And for those who haven't started, there are still things you can do to catch up.
Oh, that is good news.
Like getting out from underneath past debt. And don't get wrapped up with high-interest credit cards.
Get you some eyes.
Be diversified with your investments. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Your financial goals are not out of reach. The choice is clear. For a happy ending, choose to save.
Everyone with alcohol and drug addiction is in the same boat. With treatment, you can find solid ground. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dude, are you sure you want this tattoo? Because...
just do it!
Some mistakes in life are permanent. Like hearing loss. To learn how to protect your hearing, visit ASHA.org.
You've probably heard about heart disease, but did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. You can see behind me there's a map of Venezuela. It's right at the northern part of South America, right here, right up there. And we're talking, of course, about human rights in Venezuela. It's a very interesting country because it's one that, let's face it, a number of people on the left, progressives, cheered when Hugo Chavez won. The idea was he would be looking out for the poor. He'd get rid of some of the corruption. He might even do some kind of land reform so that the great oil wealth of Venezuela would be given for the poor. And as you've said, my guest, by the way, is Gonzalo Imiob. He is a human rights attorney in Venezuela. He's here on a special trip to Washington, D.C., and in fact is giving a press conference on Wednesday at the National Press Club at 10 a.m. All are welcome to attend, talking about his paper, Bolivarian Rule of Lawlessness, it's called. And Bolivarian Rule is what Hugo Chavez says he's doing in Venezuela, based on the great Venezuelan, not just Venezuelan, South American patriot Simon Bolivar back in the 19th century. So it starts out pretty good. It starts out with lots of promise. It starts out with, as you say, maybe a bit presidentialist in its constitution.
Yeah, and in some manners a very violent, you know, a very accelerated process. But everybody says, okay, let's see where it leads us.
So what goes wrong?
Well, the problem was that almost immediately, it was pretty clear to everybody that Chavez wanted to control all the institutions. His presidential
all the institutions of power.
Yes,
all the legislature, the judiciary, the press as well.
Yes, of course, the press.
Of course, the press.
The first chapters of this novel were related to the education. I remember exactly in 2001, the first protest, the major protest, began with these efforts of Chavez of controlling the education contents, the subjects, you know, with the children. The motto of the opposition at that moment was, you don't mess with my children, okay? You can do whatever you do, mess with my children.
I mean, our President Barack Obama has talked about education reform. Certainly a leader of a country can help decide what's going on. What was so wrong with the education?
But the problem was the ideological content of the education.
Okay? For example?
He wanted to nominate or designate inspectors to the schools.
Inspectors.
Okay? Yes.
And they would watch and see what the teachers said.
They would check what the teachers are saying according to his program of education, which was very bad because it says that every young girl and boy in Venezuela should look after the socialism as a way of thinking. And we said, hey, if you want to be a socialist, that is great, but you have to guarantee
that. So they were teaching the children that socialism and Hugo Chavez's specific brand of socialism was the only right way to
that
think.
That was the first thing, and of course all the mothers and the fathers were protesting, and that didn't pass. The break point, the first break point is 2002, in April 2002. Chavez was controlling the legislative process because he forced the Congress to pass a law that allows him to legislate in several subjects. Most of the subjects were related to the energy industries, okay? And not only the energy industries, but the basic industries, you know, the agriculture, the fishing processes, the oil industries and everything, okay? There were first 42 law decrees, okay, that were very interventional in human rights issues, and the people began to protest.
Well, give me an example. I mean, obviously, the president controlling energy, that's not really a human rights question, is it?
Yeah, the problem is that you want to control the energy in a fashion that is not acceptable in the human rights perspective. For example, the first thing he does when he was, he proclaims his law decrees, he says, okay, all the major management officers of PDVSA, which is the oil industry, are removed from their charges. And that was very humiliating, by the way, because he did this with a, you know, whistle in national TV saying, okay, you're out of the game, you're all fired.
He's good with theater then, clearly.
So, and the politics he was using regarding the oil, for example, he made several agreements with Cuba in which he traded oil for basically nothing, and people were saying, hey, what is this? We don't like this. So he was, you know, very, very, very strong-minded in these matters. When he does that, the oil industries and the oil workers began to protest. And there was a national strike first, okay, a very short one, that began on April 2002. After that, the national strike was finished. He said that he won't negotiate anything with the people. So everybody, the major leaders of the chambers of commerce, the union workers in Venezuela, and the oil workers say, okay, we are going to summon a march, a protest, okay? That was to be to take place on April 11th. In April 11th, almost a million people.
A million people?
Yes, took over Caracas.
And this is a country of what?
28 million people. A million people just in one city.
So it took over the capital city of Caracas.
Took over the
and marched
city.
Against what? What were they saying?
Well, they were asking Chavez to resign. Because they way of doing things. They were protesting against his violent methods, okay, his way of dealing with the situations. He's giving away oil to all of the countries.
What were some of his violent methods? What were some of the violence that
well,
was done?
He sends the military forces, for example, against the people that protest. Before that, for example,
he cracked down on protesters.
Yes, yes, and with military officers. And
so people were peacefully protesting, and he put them in jail.
Yes,
he beat people
on
up.
April 11th. That was very clear because 19 people were killed.
Okay.
They tried to get to the presidential palace just to ask for Chavez his resign. That was people that was unarmed, completely unarmed. In fact, there have been, according to the government, there is 79 criminal investigations open regarding those facts. None of them is related to people from the opposition. There is only the people that is dead. No one says that this is the people that is was violent against Chavez or something.
So to be clear, the government kills 19 people, putting down peaceful protests, and that's not being investigated. Only the opposition is being investigated.
Yes, in fact, from these 79 investigations, only three have been finished. The first one is that the one that was issued against these people from Chavez. That was shot, everybody saw that, over the bridge, you know, shooting at the opposition march. There were four shooters, they were all acquitted. As Chavez predicted, Chavez was on national TV saying, these guys are not criminals, these guys are heroes of the revolution, so they should be acquitted.
Let me ask you this though, Gonzalo. I mean, if you look at it from the point of view of Chavez, you could say, look, these people, they were protesting, they were trying to overthrow the government, he put it down.
You know, that happens oftentimes. You have coup d'etats, he knows. He tried to do one himself.
Yes, but that wasn't a coup d'etat.
It was not a coup d'etat.
No, it was not a coup d'etat, not in a traditional sense, in a way. This was a million people that wanted to ask Chavez to resign.
Now, let me ask you.
That is completely constitutional. You can ask your president, I don't like you.
Sure.
So I want you to resign.
He had a six-year term in 1998, right? So that ended in 2004.
Yep.
Despite all of the things that he did, he was reelected in 2000.
In 2006.
2006?
Yes.
Oh, it's an eight-year term.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a six-year term. And that is a trap. Because the first thing...
I can add, and when I add 2004...
Chavez, do you remember I told you that Chavez, the first thing he does is to summon this constitutional assembly and have a new constitution? Well, he managed to use the Supreme Court to say, okay, all the powers should be re-legitimated with this new constitution. So the period of time that has been since Chavez was elected and the constitution was issued is no
doesn't count.
So
from
so now
his
on,
starts in 2000 and goes to 2006. So he got himself two more years.
Yes,
that
and way. They and the people got signatures to revoke him on 2004. But
there was
failed.
A recall election.
Yes, yes,
they actually tried to say, "Hey, it's 2004. You should end." Why did that effort fail?
First, because we have an electoral power completely submitted to Chavez, completely submitted to Chavez. In fact, the first amount of firms, millions of signatures, okay, that were used to convoke to this recall referendum were dismissed. So we have to find the signatures again, and that was very difficult. It was a very violent process at the moment, okay? At least 10 people were killed during the protests when they rejected the signatures. And they were killed by military forces and civil forces, armed by Chavez, which are known the Bolivarian circles, okay? That are being used, Chavez uses against the opposition continuously, okay? They are informal patrols, maybe is the name. There have been experiences of that way of controlling the opposition in all Latin America. Okay.
Well, and in Iran as well. In fact, the government has had private people that go around and do the government.
Yeah, these guys.
We have to take another break. The breaks come often, but when we come back, what I'm trying to understand is everything you say, taking over the judiciary, taking over the legislature, giving himself two more years, a new constitutional assembly. All these things, and yet 8 years into his presidency, he's reelected. And that's one of the things that I want to try to understand.
Okay.
What is it, how can you have an election and still have a government that's not a democracy? If you want to join in the conversation, folks, please do. You don't have to agree with either one of us, but I do want to hear from you. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. What is a democracy? If you vote for the leader, does that make it a Democrat? Or do you need more things? Do you need judicial independence, legislative independence? We'll explore this question and more when we come back.
I need...
Job.
Necesito trabajo.
I would like to speak English better.
Me gustaría hablar inglés mejor.
I want to be a U.S. citizen.
Quisiera ser ciudadano de los Estados Unidos.
For over 35 years.
Por más de 35 años.
The Hispanic Committee of Virginia has been serving our community.
El Comité Hispano de Virginia ha estado sirviendo a nuestra comunidad.
Job training and placement.
Capacitación, ayuda para conseguir trabajo.
Education for children and adults.
Educación para niños y adultos.
Immigration, naturalization, and medical referrals.
Ayuda para los procesos de inmigración y naturalización y orientación sobre médicos
are a small part of what we do.
Son solo una pequeña parte de lo que hacemos.
For help, information, or to volunteer,
para ayuda, información o para ofrecerse como voluntario,
contact the Hispanic Committee of Virginia.
Comuníquese con el Comité Hispano de Virginia.
Helping everyone participate more fully in American society.
Ayudando a todos a participar plenamente en la sociedad norteamericana.
Where's yours?
Would you notice if you were missing half your kidney function? According to the National Kidney Foundation, 20 million people have chronic kidney disease, and 20 million more may be at risk and not even know it. Anyone with high blood pressure, diabetes, or family history of chronic kidney disease is at risk. Early diagnosis is vitally important. To get the whole story, talk to your doctor and visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org or call for a free brochure. Because when it comes to chronic kidney disease, you might not know the half.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking about Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, a person who came to power with great promise, promising to help the poor. But it seems that most of his time in power is mostly about helping himself. We've talked for the first half hour about how he tried to revise the institutions of a country that, let's face it, had a fairly stable democracy for 40 years before his coming to power. And yet, despite the fact that he changed the institutions, despite the fact that a million people marched in Caracas, the capital, despite the fact that there was a recall election to take him out of power, the recall election fails, and 2 years later, he's reelected. What's going on here?
Well, first thing we have to understand is that Chavez has managed himself pretty well to make a strong emotional connection with the poor people of Venezuela. He was very generous with all his missions, you know, towards the poor people, okay? And somehow they feel now that they have a voice, and that is true, because Chavez somehow represents what they wanted to be.
Well, did their lives improve?
Yeah, at some point, not completely, okay? As I was telling you before the program, the show begins, there is an illusion of more money in the streets. But this money doesn't buy the same things less money bought in the past. I don't know if I...
Oh, I understand. There's inflation. In other words, people have more money, but it buys less.
Yes.
In other words, you might have $100, but you can't buy some milk.
But the problem is emotional, okay? Chavez has linked himself to a very strong... part of a population in an emotional basis, and that is undisputable.
Okay, but Gonzalo,
and the opposition doesn't have a leader.
At the end of the day, if the poor people are the majority of Venezuela, they put their leader in power, that's democracy, right?
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly.
No,
why not?
No, because democracy is not only elections. Okay, in fact, you cannot tell that a president is a Democrat just only because he's a very nice guy and people like him. No, you have to see what is his relation with the institutions, okay? Especially with the institutions that controls him, okay? He has managed to control all the institutions, from the Congress to the Tribunal, Supreme Court.
There's not three branches of government.
No, there are not three branches.
There's Chavez, no. Chavez, and Chavez.
It is so clear that it's like that, that sentences, decisions of the court are issued by Chavez himself in his public speeches. For example, we were talking about the facts of April 11th, okay? Just after Chavez was in the power again, was regained his power, he said two things. The people that shoot at other people on behalf of the revolution should be acquitted of all faults, and they are to be considered as heroes of the revolution.
If you shoot at an unarmed protester in the name of the revolution,
yes,
then you haven't committed a crime.
Yeah, you haven't committed a crime. One of the investigations held against these people, the whole world saw shooting at the opposition mark. These four people were completely acquitted, based on the criteria Chavez has established. The decision of the court says these guys were acting on self-defense, they were defending the revolution, and they are to be considered heroes. That was the first decision.
But
Chavez said that was, the other guys that were shooting at the patriots, that were defending the revolution, should be considered as traitors to the country, and they should be punished with the higher penalties.
And then who were the traitors?
These guys, Lázaro Forero, Iván Simonovic,
and what did they do?
And Henry Vivas, They were the police officers.
The police officers
that were protecting the opposition marchers against these guys that were shooting at the opposition march.
I see.
Since they were doing that, and the police officers under their command were doing that, they were recently sentenced to 30 years in prison.
Wow.
So just as Chavez said. Okay?
And one of the things that you point out in your investigative report here, Bolivarian Rule of Lawlessness, that I found very interesting is that the judges themselves get taken out. Your client, a man by the name of
Eligio Cedeño.
Eligio Cedeño.
Yes.
Was actually acquitted, was said that he was told to be freed by one judge, and Chavez therefore removed the judge and put another judge in.
It has happened in several cases. I have the honor to represent, for example, Francis Cusón, who was a general of the military, of the army. He was a former Minister of Financial Affairs of Chavez, okay? He was a Chavista. But since he saw what Chavez ordered on April 11, 2002, he resigned his charge. And since that, he was persecuted by Chavez, and eventually he was convicted for an opinion he rendered in a television show to 5 years and 6 months in prison, okay? When this case began, one judge said, okay, I won't release him, but this is not my matter to know, okay? I have to give this case to a higher court. That was not what Chavez was saying. That has to be done with this guy. So this guy, this judge, and this is true because I lived it directly. This guy, 20 minutes after that, he made this decision. I was waiting, you know, to sign the documents and everything. And he was released from his office with this box with all his personal belongings, and he said,
"Your client was
no.
The judge.
The judge.
The judge.
Said, I have just been fired from my post. From my
so
judge.
20 minutes after the judge ruled in favor of your client.
No, not in favor.
Not in favor.
Not in favor.
He's saying that I can't decide this right now.
I cannot decide this.
Another court has to decide this.
Yes.
Just saying that.
20 minutes after
later,
that,
he was fired.
Like this and say, doctor, please don't look at me because I'm not supposed to talk to you, but I have been fired. Because
so let me ask you this. We were going to have on this show today.
And in Eligio Cedeño,
yeah,
happens the same. But with another judge. What happened with this judge? What is Yuri Lopez? The
Yuri Lopez was going is in town. And,
yes.
And she was going to be on this show today.
Yes, but she is afraid.
She's afraid.
Yes,
she is
afraid.
What is
because
she, afraid of?
She has been granted asylum here in the U.S. She lives in Orlando, in the Florida. But her mother is still there in Venezuela. And she is very cautious about his public appearances because she has been threatened to death several times. And the fact...
Threatened to be killed.
Yeah, threatened to
her
be
mother.
Killed several times. Not her mother, also her.
Oh, her son.
And the fact that finally makes her come to the United States and ask for asylum is that somebody, while she was the judge on Eligio Cedeño's case, sent two persons, two big guys, to her son's school with a false authorization, say, hey, to the teachers, I have this authorization from Yuri Lopez. I am the brother of Yuri Lopez, so I have to take this
child.
Yes, to take the child with me. Of course, the people in the school say 11 years old at that moment. And of course, the school was, this is a very strange thing. They called their mother and say, hey, I don't even have a brother, so what is this? They tried to ask this guy who they were. They were police officers, but they flee the place. Okay, so they tried to kidnap their son, her son, just because she ruled against one of the participants, one of the protagonists of this story, which is the nephew of the former general attorney, Isaias Rodriguez.
Now, my guess is that the ordinary Venezuelan person, and I don't know, maybe they can watch this show on the internet. I hope they can. We will be posting this on the internet, and hopefully they understand enough English, or you can translate into Spanish. But when the government controls the press, as Hugo Chavez does, these stories don't get out. I assume the story you just said has not been published in the Venezuelan press.
No, and if they are published, because we have a fair amount, at least, of free media.
Still,
yes. Globovisión, for example, the newspaper El Nacional, El Universal.
So there is some free media.
Yes, there is some free media. This media is completely blocked after that, okay? You have to remember, and I keep telling this all the times I have to talk about human rights issues in Venezuela. Human rights issue, human rights have to be protected in three different levels. First, you have to recognize them, okay, formally in your constitution, or in your constitution you have to have an article that says, okay, if there is a human right not recognized in this constitution, I will also recognize, because the international parameters.
And Venezuela does recognize it on a legal basis. And to be fair, the Soviet Union did too in the Helsinki Accords. That didn't mean that they exercised it, but at least on paper they have the rights.
Yes, okay. That is the first level. The second level is when you exercise your human rights, and that is when Venezuela starts to get in trouble. Because, for example, the right to public manifestation is not guaranteed in Venezuela.
You mean people protesting?
Yes. The right to protest.
We call it a peaceful assembly in the United States, in our constitution.
How do Chavez controls that? He sends you the military forces. Or he declares, for example, that some places in very strategic cities are to be considered military zones. So nobody can protest
in cities, like the entire capital city of Caracas.
Yes,
almost all Caracas
is a military zone, so nobody can protest there. So in the second level, while you are exercising your human right, there should be protected also. But in Venezuela, sometimes are protected, but sometimes they are not protected. And the third level is the more critical level, which is the not criminalizing of the act of the exercising of protesting or exercising a human right. For example, my case, or the case of Eligio Cedeño, or the case of General Uzón. My case, I brought up a legal action regarding the facts of April 11th, 2002 to the Supreme Court in Venezuela. The Supreme Court didn't pay attention to me. They say nothing about my action, or the action of the victims I represent. So what I did.
And it's not just one or two. You represent
seven of the families of the seven killed, and at least 60 of the injured. At
60.
Yeah. 60, yes.
60.
So the Supreme Court didn't pay attention to me. Okay, so what I did, or the lawyers that are working together with it, we come to the international jurisdiction. We went first to the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights. After that, since we have several victims that are Spanish citizens, we went to Spain. And after that, we went to The Hague, to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Just because of that, Chavez said that we are traitors to the country because we are plotting with a foreigner countries and a foreigner institutions in order to subvert the constitutional government. Okay. So the third level is very important. You can exercise your right, for example, to free expression, freedom of expression, as the media does. But after that, Chavez criminalizes. Okay,
it makes illegal what you've done. So let me ask you this. You mentioned what she feared, the people trying to kidnap her son. How about you? Are you going back to Venezuela?
Yes, I'm going back to Venezuela. And fear is not an option. Yes, of course I am afraid. I have a little girl, 2 years old, in Venezuela. But I have discovered that the more you appear, the more you are willing to denounce these things, the more exposure you have, the more protected you are. Because it is very clear
if something happens to you, everybody knows who is to blame about that.
So I'm trying to make these efforts because I love my country, and I think we should make this effort. Fear is not an option here in Venezuela, there in Venezuela at this moment. But you see, three levels. So sometimes I have, for example, journalists, friends of mine.
Before you go into something new, we have to take one more break. That's the nature of television. We'll take one more break. I also want to, again, I know it's a complex issue, but if you have your views or you simply have a question, please don't hesitate to call. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. What are your views on what's going on in Venezuela? Are you a Chavez supporter? Are you a little bit leery of him? We'll be right back after this.
I helped turn my child's public school into a whole new kind of school. One with a curriculum that really motivates kids. One that has extended hours, 6 days a week, year-round, with loads of academic, cultural, and recreational activities. one that has support services like medical and dental right there. A school where parents' involvement is encouraged, where teachers have more time to teach, and students are excited about learning. There's just one problem. My child doesn't ever want to come home. You can help turn your school into a community school for excellence. Find out how. Call 1-877-LOVE-TO-LEARN.
It's coming. Right to your neighborhood. And when it does, you may be surprised. It's your Social Security statement of your benefits, and it's going to help you plan your financial future. Your benefit statement will tell you how much Social Security you're eligible to receive and when you'll get it. Then you'll know how much you need to save for retirement, because that's coming too. The future is in your hands. Choose to save.
The toxic fumes from this meth lab are seeping into Jamie's sinus cavity. Ammonia vapors invade her throat. Toxic gases fill her lungs. Jamie's body is deteriorating. And she doesn't even know it.
Jamie, dinner.
So, who has the drug problem now? Find out how meth affects you at drugfree.org/meth.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're talking with Venezuelan human rights attorney Gonzalo Imiob. He has written an investigative report, you might call it Bolivarian Rule of Lawlessness, about some of the political prisoners that he represents in Venezuela. We've been talking about the role and rule of Hugo Chavez. And Gonzalo, I have to be frank with you. There are people who are very big supporters of Chavez. As you know, you talked yeah. about the fact that he has a lot of following among the poor. He has a lot of following among the left, frankly, in the United States and throughout the world. And what they're saying when they watch you is, well, you represent the rich. You represent the oil interests. You represent the businesses. You represent the old regime. Of course you're opposed to Chavez. You have a bias. How would you respond to that?
Well, first thing that they should know better, they should investigate me better, because I am not precisely a rich person. And then I'll have them to ask, to, for example, my pupils in the universities, what are my points of view regarding the exclusion patterns, okay, in the past?
The exclusion
patterns. The exclusion, yes.
Meaning excluding the poor people
in the past. People, yes. And if you ask me...
So you're an advocate for the poor in Venezuela?
Yes. I even represent a lot of people that doesn't have the money to be represented in the courts, and I do that. And I want to really listen to... I am a socialist. If you ask me, I am a socialist. I what you call a center-left guy that believes, truly believes, that the government should put these views in the poor people.
So you believe in redistribution of wealth?
Yes, I believe in that, but I also believe in the respect of the human rights and the rules of democracy, which Chavez doesn't respect whatsoever.
So you're a socialist, he's a socialist, but you're a Democrat, and he's not.
He's not, really. Yes, that's the difference.
It's an important distinction, because people are going to say, well, you're just defending capitalism. You're not.
No,
you are a socialist, but you disagree with Hugo Chavez.
In fact, I was on a public debate in the State Channel against this woman from the Professional Socialist Front of Chavez. And the first thing that made her lost the debate was that. He says, because we socialists, and I say, hey, I am a socialist too. The problem is that I don't want everybody to be socialist, and I don't want everybody to be imposed with the socialist
ideas.
You want
people to have the right to
yes.
decide what
if you want
socialism.
To be a socialist, that is right with me. But if you want to be a capitalist, that is right with me too, because I respect the freedom of speech and the freedom of thought of thinking of the people.
And that brings up my next point, which is that there was a referendum just a couple of years ago that, I think to much of the world's surprise, Chavez lost.
Yes.
Now, he didn't announce it right away. He waited several hours, but by 51% to 49%.
No, that
and
wasn't.
I don't know whether you think that was the real vote.
No, I wasn't.
But he tried to change the Constitution even more to allow himself to run unlimitedly, and he'd take away a lot of the remaining independent institutions, and the Venezuelan people voted him down.
Yes, people voted him down because it was very clear that the only thing that mattered to Chavez, and the time proved so that the people were right, was to be reelected continuously. That was the only thing that mattered to Chavez. And people in Venezuela is not dumb. People, even the poor people, say, hey, this is not what I want. I don't want this guy ruling over Venezuela forever. What was the problem? That after that, the opposition was really divided, and Chavez managed himself to propose illegally, because he once you propose these subjects in a reform, constitutional reform, they are not allowed to be proposed again. But Chavez, you know, went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, hey, yes, no, this is not the same. This is not the same. This is another thing. So, well, it was.
And then he had another referendum that was not as strong as the other one. It simply allowed him to run for power.
The difference between the first one and the second one was the amount of publicity, the amount of money invested by the government in the first one. The first one was a really complex one. There were 68 articles of the Constitution he wanted to change, and that was a very difficult idea to swallow to the people. The second one was only one article, and the amount of money invested in publicity from the government were 200 more money in that
200
case,
times the 200 more than
times
the before.
More than.
So the second, the one article he wanted to change was he wanted to be able to
be reelected,
be reelected again and again and again for the rest of his life. And
the same article that was proposed as one of the articles to be
one of the 68 before.
Yeah,
and this time it passed. So at least a majority of Venezuelans, unless you think the vote was fixed.
Well, I don't think the vote was fixed. I think that there prevailed first the amount of money invested in the publicity. You know, the complete. I have to tell you this: governors, congressmen, congresswomen, all say at that moment we are no longer in function. We are working in order to make this amendment of the Constitution be successful.
So I'm not going to run my state,
power,
I'm not going to run my province.
No, no.
I'm going to work
the power of the officialism was completely devoted to make Chavez win this election.
Was there any opposition of any?
Yes, there was opposition, but there was no and a strong opposition, okay? And we have to be frank. There was an election process coming, we just have passed an election process, which is the one that passed with in November 28, 2008, and that made the opposition very divided because it was a very complex process.
So what is the future of Venezuela? Famously, in the United States of America, President Obama meets Hugo Chavez. Hugo Chavez gives him a book on all the things the United States has done wrong, many of which we have done wrong, there's no doubt about it, some of which may be an exaggeration. Our president shakes his hand, smiles, is criticized in America for smiling while he shakes his hand. What is the future of Venezuela, and what should the future of the United States policy be toward Venezuela, given these human rights concerns?
Okay, the future in Venezuela is this.
Bolivarian rule
Bolivarian of lawlessness. Bolivarian rule of lawlessness, and the future in Venezuela is that there will be a lot of people like Eligio Cedeño, for example, put in prison just because of their ideas. That is the future of Venezuela. That is what we are expecting right now. Hugo Chavez is, you know, narrowing the circle of restriction of human rights in Venezuela. He's sending people like Eligio Cedeño to jail without a trial.
So he's Eligio Cedeño no trial
been,
at all?
No. Eligio Cedeño has been in prison for more than 2 years, almost 3 years.
So he's increasing power step
yes.
by step by
yes.
step
Steps,
and making it
yes.
tighter and tighter.
Yeah.
Will
exactly.
there not be another election? Well, what do you think?
On 2012. And that is why he's narrowing the limits, because he knows that the economics will not be favorable to him. And he's narrowing the circle. He's trying to control the opposition. Eligio Cedeño's case is a very complex example of this.
What can the United States government do, if anything? You know, recently there were many people marching in the streets of Tehran in Iran. And I think all around the world, our hearts went out to them. We felt very bad. We wanted them to have freedom and democracy, but there was nothing we could do. We weren't going to send United States troops over there. What can America, what can Americans, and what could our president do to help you in Venezuela?
Well, be aware of this. Hugo Chavez is not the kind of guy you want to be taking a picture with, okay? So be careful with this. We are happy, for example, with the renewal of the diplomatic relationships between Venezuela and
that's okay.
And the U.S. That's great. But you cannot go blind into the dark. Okay, this is a very complex process. There is people like Eligio Cedeño right now in prison just because of their beliefs. This guy, for example, Eligio Cedeño, has been more than 2 years, almost 3 years in prison without a trial. Okay, his daughter, for example, was kidnapped in 2006. The kidnappers were convicted. They were in prison 3.5 years. Eligio Cedeño, without a conviction, will be in prison more than the people that kidnapped their daughter with a sentence, with a punishment, formal punishment. Otto Hebauer, Francisco Usón, Manuel Rosales.
There's a long list of names. If you were advising our president, Barack Obama, what would you advise him to do? Should he mention to Chavez these political prisoners by name? Should he demand they be freed? Should he do so openly? Should he do so privately? What would you advise our president to do?
The first thing is to recognize the situation, okay? The main enemy of the political prisoners is not to be recognized, okay? Obama should say, okay, Chavez, we know that you had political prisoners. So what do you do, or what will you do with your political prisoners? Prior to establish another kind of relationships. My point of view is this. Over the economic relationship within the countries, over the diplomatic relations, there should be the consideration of a human being as an end of itself. I don't know if I make myself
clear. No, you
clear.
Do, absolutely.
Okay, the human rights are above all these things. You cannot put economic relations, economic interests, the oil revenues, for example, the oil business, over the dignity of the people of Venezuela. We have people that have been killed in Venezuela for political reasons. We have people that have been tortured in Venezuela for political reasons. We have people that have been put into jail for political reasons in Venezuela. So President Obama should at least consider these facts before he enters the relations with Chavez, or at least knowing that these realities are true. Okay, I am more than willing to confront these truths with whoever wants to talk to me about this. But I have the facts. I don't have opinions about the facts. I have the facts.
And if you have a question about what's happened today, what you've seen today, if you disagree with Gonzalo Imiob, all you have to do is go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. You can post your comment, and I'll make sure to get you an answer. Now, Wednesday, the day after tomorrow, 10 a.m., you're appearing at the National Press Club.
Yeah.
We only have a few seconds. Briefly, tell me what you're going to say there.
I am going to respond to any question they have about the situation of Venezuela. I want to show to the people there what's really happening in Venezuela.
And you're going to talk about your report?
The white paper and the case of Eligio Cedeño, which is a very emblematic case at this moment in Venezuela regarding political prisoners.
Bolivarian rule of lawlessness. And I think it always bears repeating. Democracy is more than a single vote.
Yes.
Democracy is about institutions, separation of powers, an independent judiciary, an independent legislative branch, an independent press. And by these standards, Venezuela, unfortunately,
democracy
today,
is about not using violence to impose your own ideas.
Not using violence to impose your ideas. Thank you very much, Gonzalo, for coming here on YouTube. Talk a little.